Hi, David. What are first things?
The first and most important thing this morning is that we're joined by one of our superstar young leaders, Kylie Knowles.
Hi, Kylie.
Hi, good morning, Steve and David.
Good morning. Kylie, where are you standing right now?
Right now, I am sitting on my porch in the U District where all my housemates are fast asleep, but no sleep for the wicked, right?
You got that. I've been up since, you know, five something, because this isn't the time to sleep in my life. This isn't the time to sleep. But I'll tell you why.
What are you doing? What are you doing at 5 in the morning, David? Are you making phone calls to the East Coast, talking to Europe? What are you doing?
I'm trying to sleep at that time, but I'm thinking. I'm thinking of activities that we're doing for Common Power. I'm thinking about my own way of kind of approaching each day. I'm thinking about what it is that we as a family, where we're at in our lives. Thinking about all those things, man. That's what you do when you're over 40 years old. All right?
I've heard that's true, yeah.
But you know those commercials? I don't know if they're still doing them, because I don't know if people use are traveling at all anymore, but the where somebody comes in professionally and they're like going to make a presentation and they think they're an expert, and they say, "What do you think you're an expert for?" Because I stayed at Holiday Inn Express last night.
Oh yeah, I've seen those.
Kylie, have you seen these?
I have, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I do like a Holiday Inn Express, and my favorite part of it is the breakfast in the morning. And so I have been creating my own Holiday Inn Express at home for the last couple of days. I've been moving between cereals and oatmeal and toast and fruit and stuff. And that is just like, it makes me very happy. I'm having my own Holiday Inn Express breakfast.
You have them all set up on the counter with little dispensers, and maybe you clean up every once in a while as well, just to feel in place.
Totally. Yeah, because my wife bought, like for the last week, a couple weeks, she's been in this really big containers and storage push. So every single thing in the house is now in some kind of container that has a little like vacuum seal on it that you have to like push down on it and the top pops up, right? So like, yeah, it feels like I'm in some kind of space that's like, where like things have to be taken care of long-term for food.
Very nice, very nice. I'm sure there's a metaphor in there that's coming, right? About things being taken care of for the long-term.
You know, I think that there's, so, well, I'll tell you this. So yesterday, we're getting to the point of this morning's podcast now. Yesterday, I talked about how I personally was affected by the debate in 2012 with Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, and my response to it and what I felt like was something I wanted to do, and that it catapulted me into a new phase of my professional life. I'm at a traffic jam right now. There's many walkers and there's a car. And I wanted to pick up that theme and continue that theme this morning. So I asked Kylie to join us. So Steve, you're got to participate in this too, okay?
Sure.
But I didn't bother telling you because you never told me what we were going to talk about when I came on KUOW. So this is just some payback, okay?
Fair enough.
The topic this morning is, how have we been changed by let's just say, the last 12 years, but it could be the last month and a half. It could be anywhere in there, since I had brought up something from 8 years ago yesterday. Like, how have we been changed as a person from this journey civically since, located with Barack Obama's election in 2008. But again, it could be anywhere in the last months or days or weeks or years. But how have we been changed in some notable way from these experiences, from what we've gone through, from what we've chosen to do, what we've had the opportunity to do? And so for Kylie, over the last 12 years, she was eight years old, I think, and 12 years ago. But well, this, you know, don't have to reach that far back if you don't want. So I'm just going to pick from last night for me. So I'll go first and say that the debate last night, for me, got me more fired up and more appreciative and more inspired by Joe Biden than I've been. And I haven't been reluctant to work for him at all. I've not been reluctant at all. I think very highly of this individual, of who he is as a human being. But what I saw last night was him fighting for an America that I want to see too. He fought for, the two people were asked about, he and Trump were asked about election integrity. He spoke about the importance of protecting our election systems. Trump didn't address the question at all. When Biden laid out the issues he was fighting for, he said the $15 minimum wage. He talked about climate change as an existential crisis that he would commit to. He named a series of policies. He talked about being committed to a public option for Medicare and Medicaid. He made the argument about the horrible atrocities of separating children from their parents at the border. He said that he and the Obama administration, that they made mistakes about how much they deported immigrants. He said that within 100 days, he was going to put forward a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers. He talked about the economy and working on it, rebuilding it. And of course, he laid out very, in some depth, his commitment to coronavirus and how we were going to beat it. And he said, and I remember the line of the debate, I think, when Trump said, we got to learn to live with it. And did you two watch the debate?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
Do you know do you remember what Biden said in response to that?
Well, I don't, but I remember that his response was basically, that's a terrible policy.
Kylie, do you remember?
I don't remember word for word. No.
So if I was a better podcast participant, I would have had it queued up. But he said, and maybe Steve, you can go get it. He said, we're not learning to live with it. We're learning to die with it. Mm. And that's the kind of critique that I'm looking for about what has happened with COVID. What we are going through with COVID has forever defined and impacted the lives of people that are affected by it. Even if they, and I put these words in quotes, recover from it, no problem. So I saw a better America there, and I saw Biden fight for the American family, not his family, not Trump's family. And that got me fired up in a different way, in a way that wasn't just about winning this election, but actually about the America we got the chance to kind of work towards. So that's how I was impacted last night. And I was surprised. I texted and tweeted and said, Biden's getting more liberal by the minute. And I thought that was really great. I don't think he's not Bernie. No, of course not. But he was definitely fighting for a progressive America. Well, so that was how I was changed.
Let's just hope nobody gets a hold of that tweet and turns it into an ad on Twitter. See, David Domke, who we all know is in the pocket of AOC and 3, admits it.
Totally.
Biden's getting more liberal.
All right. Kylie, thanks for joining and getting up for this. Kylie, what's your answer to this question?
No, that's a great question. Something that when you asked me, David, yesterday, I was kind of thinking about, and immediately I thought back to like June when I came on full time with Common Power. But I guess like, you know, my civic journey begins way before that. But I think that where I'm going to anchor myself is like about a year ago today when my mom brought me to a Common Power workshop, probably about this time on a Saturday, which you can imagine just about like getting up this time on a Friday for a college student. but at the time I had just started my second year at UW and I was just kind of searching for my first like undergraduate internship, but I was pretty like I was pretty lost. I mean, in high school, you know, I was like student government, like excellent student. I was doing those, all those right things. But I was really trying to figure out who I was and like where I fit in this kind of increasingly confusing world. But Common Power definitely taught me a lot about my civic journey and that you can really do this work as part of your life. And I found myself really becoming engaged and realizing that when you make time and space to dedicate to being an active citizen, it can come to you a lot easier than I thought. I think that it can be very intimidating to say you're civically engaged as a young person. You get a lot of kind of, you know, when you're thinking about sitting at Thanksgiving dinner in a few weeks with your family in theory, right? But I think that what I've learned so much in the past, you know, year or so is just how easy it is to make change, which sounds so weird to think about. And I think that I've like definitely been discouraged a lot in the past 6 months in particular. But, you know, one voter that I registered in February, one person that I connected with census calling, and then one person helping them get out to vote this fall, like all of those things all contribute to this larger goal that really means to me, like what it means to be an American and thinking more about broadly, like what role I play as a citizen in this country. And so I think that I have a much better understanding of what it means to be a citizen and what it means to be engaged through this experience and just, I guess, growing up.
So imagine you were meeting somebody who you really, really cared about, like someone you were going to maybe date, and they might be like somebody that you could really, really, really get to know, and who knows, long-term possibilities. And you were sitting down with that person and you were 2 or 3 weeks into getting to know them and really caring about each other. And this person said, what the hell is this Common Power and why do you devote so much time to it? So your answer is not a flippant one. It's like a deadly serious one because you care about this person so much. What's your answer to that, Kylie?
I think that my answer would be that I care about you and I care about the people that are coming after us. I think when I first came on with CP, really, like even as like a mojo maker, I hadn't really understood our values in practice as much as I do now. And the value of working in community and in teams and thinking about the next generation is something that now is very instilled. And I think that's what my response would be. I would think about, I'm thinking about who's coming next. And if even like the slightest bit of me cares about what's going to happen to the people coming next, then I feel like it's more of like an obligation. It's like not even like a choice that I'm choosing to vote this time. It's something that I have to do.
Well, it's great to have you, Kylie, and you make us better and you inspire us. And you also join the teams more like broadly defined. You join the teams and are a great team player as well as a leader. So I'm really, really glad you came there a year ago and that you did what you did afterwards, which was immediately send emails to me and then to Charles to get together to meet, and that you pursued it and you gave it a chance and all of that. So it's really great.
Well, thank you. Cause I think that, I mean, one of the things that I mentioned too is when I was thinking about, I found CP kind of like at the right time for me a year ago, I was looking for internships and, you know, a lot of organizations really do say that they care about next generation leadership and, want young folks. And I think that this is the first time that I felt that that was really true and being lived out. And so, thank you.
Totally. All right. See, we're going to come to you. And then Kylie, I want to do a little exercise that I've learned over the years to do. So can you ask a follow-up question to Steve after he tells us his thoughts?
Absolutely.
So each have, okay, great. So Steve, please.
I reject the parameters you've set. I, like Donald Trump, will just answer any way I want, no matter what you ask me. I'm going to go further back. I was 14 years old in 1968, and I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. And it was already an important election year and an important year. And in early in the spring, me and my friend Rich Risen took the train down to Wilmette, Illinois, and we went to a Eugene McCarthy fundraiser and rally. And I was clean for Gene, you know, that was the button that they gave us, clean for Gene.
Yeah.
And I was very excited about, you know, being there, seeing a candidate, milling about. I remember shaking his hand as he, you know, was just moving by, and he just kind of thought that was funny that a couple of kids were there, but we were not the only kids there. And it was just exciting and it was important. And then, of course, 1968 unfolded when I was just a kid. So Dr. King, and then we paid attention to Robert Kennedy too, liked Robert Kennedy, and then that happened. And then the convention. And as a 14-year-old, my parents were not letting me take a train and go downtown to Chicago. But I watched that convention coverage, and I watched what happened on the streets of Chicago. And it was appalling. And then Nixon and Humphrey worked hard for our votes. And Nixon's view of America and how he viewed those demonstrators was really very stark in comparison to what I saw and what I understood had happened. And the people I talked to who were a little older, like my sisters and their friends, who could go downtown and did go downtown and did not get their heads beat, but they saw a lot of people getting their heads beat by Chicago police. And then came election night, but a day or two before the election, or maybe a little earlier, Humphrey had this great moment on television where he was talking to the American people in the way that Biden does. And it was, I remember just being touched by it. And I'm thinking, wow, he's going to win. He's going to do it, because he was so authentic. And Nixon was just so saying things that were just not to my understanding of reality at all, especially when he talked about law and order, especially when he made his pitch, which was the version of dog whistling in the 1960s, I realize now, about who he wanted, the great silent majority. And then, of course, Nixon wins. And I was crestfallen. I was crushed. And my dad literally put his hand on my shoulder when we sat there watching the returns coming in. And he said, sometimes the right guy doesn't win. Sometimes the wrong guy wins. And you just gotta pick yourself up, keep going. I mean, I'm paraphrasing there, but the hand on my shoulder and sometimes the right guy doesn't win, that stuck in my head. And it made me become a journalist because of what I saw, contrast to what I saw and what I heard. And it made me always look for the right guy, I guess, in my estimation, the person who had the best values and spoke truth to my understanding of the truth.
That's really interesting.
That reminds me a lot. Yeah, hear your follow-up. Let's go.
Well, that reminds me a lot of kind of how I think that I felt in 2016. That was my first, you know, presidential election that I was somewhat engaged in. I was in high school, and I went to like my first few political rallies that year. And, you know, that night when Trump won and the next day at school, and just the feeling of the right guy not winning. I'm kind of curious for you, Steve, with that in mind, how are you kind of going into this election, and what do you see as, you know, you mentioned that kind of catapulted you into journalism and your career path, you know, coming off of this being at a different point in your life, where do you see yourself going after? What is going to be the move then?
I am less hopeful about the right guy winning this time. Mm-hmm. But if the right guy wins, then I see my role, I guess I guess I see my role working as I have been now with young people in teaching. I see my role as continuing to argue that there are truths to be found and that you cannot accept a kind of cynical view that everybody does this, everybody does that, because it is not true, and you can prove it by spending time looking for facts. And that if you're willing to look for facts, and if you make yourself train to look for facts, the truth is out there, as Mulder and Scully found.
Yeah. Well, I think back to late February, when the two of us and about 15, 16 others were in South Carolina for a week before the primary, which is the phase, as we know, when Joe Biden won the primary. It was in South Carolina, and the largely African-American Democratic voting population got behind him and said, look, we're not looking for perfect, we're looking for good, and he's good. But I still remember two moments in that trip as we wrap up that involved you two. One was, Kylie, when you went to the Donald Trump rally, and I definitely pegged that as a moment that you figured something out about yourself and about America. And you went to the rally to see things, to learn, to observe, to see how you felt. And I thought it was very mature the way you processed it and talked about it and thought about it. And Steve, I remember, I believe it was the same night when you and I and I think Troy, maybe it was a different night, were off at a rally, a few others, with Bernie Sanders at Wofford College. And was in this big basketball arena. Wofford's got this really good basketball team. Really beautiful basketball arena. And you could see that Sanders' support was good, but it wasn't what it had been in Iowa. And we're getting ready to kind of wind things up there, and we had no idea where Steve Scher is, and this is not uncommon. We had no idea where Steve was, and I'm looking around the arena, and you're like 50 rows up at the other end of the arena talking to some couple, older couple, interviewing them about life, I guess, and about this. And that curiosity, that endless curiosity, Steve, of yours, and grace and generosity. The two of you, it was great to be there. It's great to be here now in this work. It's a gift to us, really. So we got 11 days to go in this election, and then we got many years ahead of us, like another 150 for me. We got a lot of years ahead of us. So final word for the day for each of us. See, Steve, I'm really dropping them on you. I didn't tell you what we were doing. So, Steve, what's your final word for the day?
It's just one word. I only have a phrase. Gird your loins. It's a bumpy ride. Not just this one, but all the ones to come.
Okay. I'll go. I'll give you another 30 seconds, Kylie.
Oh, thanks. We'll
think about it. what'd you say? That's yours? What's yours?
No, I just said thanks for those 30
seconds. Okay, sure. Sure.
But that's her word too. Thanks.
Thanks.
maybe. Let's see. I would say for me, it's certainly determined is one that always comes to mind if I am. But it's more, I think, appreciative of this moment, of this chance, of this community.
I like that. I think that my word is probably moving. I'm gonna pick that because I'm definitely still waking up, and I think that people are getting fatigued, but we're still moving, and that's what we have to keep doing.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Steve, what time is it?
It's time to get to work, David.
I think it is. for Kylie, it might involve going back to sleep first, but we appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.